Chair Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in, the absentee members.
On the Pogemiller motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Paul Rogers, the House of Representatives chaplain, and then remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
You get top. Let us pray. We have entered daylight saving time, O God, giving us visions of short sleeve temperatures and long evenings. While we enjoy the dream, keep us mindful of reality that changing our clocks extends daylight further into the evening, but it does not increase either light or time, and we always need both. So we ask you to bless this body of men and women in the Minnesota Senate and the various offices and staff who support them. Fill them with the spirit of wisdom and justice that they have good insight into the issues, and that both the process and result of their efforts can bear the scrutiny of bright illumination. Shelter them from the tendency of limited time becoming an adversary, as the remaining time for their work grows inevitably shorter. Give them that peace of mind necessary to work clearly, efficiently, effectively. Finally, O God, in the face of harsh voices and headlines, and sometimes even in the face of their own rhetoric, let these people know that they deserve respect and honor for their willingness to put in long weeks and months serving the rest of us. At the end of the day, bless them with satisfaction and fulfillment in their service. Amen.
Now I turn face the flag. Right here.
Yeah. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Good.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Spark, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Bickerman, Wergen, and Wieger. Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. First order of business is executive and official communications. They are printed on today's agenda. Next order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage of the House of the following House files. Herewith transmitted, House file numbers 472 and 1200. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Okay, next order of business is first reading of House bills. They are printed on today's agenda. They will be referred as indicated without objection. First reading of House bills. Next order of business is reports of committees.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in today's agenda be adopted. And just a heads up, there will be an addendum later in the day.
Wait a second. I didn't even hear you. Senator Porter.
Mr. President, I made the motion to adopt the committee reports printed in the agenda, and apparently there will be an addendum a little later during the floor session of more committee reports. But we're not moving those yet because they're not here yet.
Did he move that? Question on the motion to adopt the reports. The question on the motion to adopt the reports. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business is second reading of Senate bills. There are two printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. We'll go to the eighth order of business, motions and resolutions. We're going to stay on motions. We won't take the Senator Berglund motion now because she's not in the chambers. There are motions to be read at the desk.
Senator Prentner Solon moves that Senate File 726 be withdrawn from the Committee on Judiciary, re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Prentner Solon on the motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have spoken with the committee chairs of both committees.
Okay. All in favor of the Prentner Solon motion, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
And Senator Marty moves that Senate File 1095 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Oversight.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, this is a bill that will end up in finance, but it needs to go to state and local government first.
Okay. On the motion by Senator Marty, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
And Senator Lynch moves that Senate File 1320 be withdrawn from the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've spoken with the chairs of both committees.
On the Lynch motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Berglund, we're going to revert to a motion that you're going to make in Senate File 1461. To withdraw the bill from the Committee on Health and Housing and Family Security and
I move that Senate File 1461 be withdrawn from the Committee on Health, Housing, and Human Services and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
On the Berglund motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. A couple other motions to be read at the desk.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 1178 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Oversight.
You've talked to the this is your bill?
This is my bill, and we didn't realize it had adding some people to a commission or creating an oversight commission. Okay. In one of the departments, so apparently we have to go to state and local first.
On the Berglund motion to re-refer, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Senator Berglund.
And I move that Senate File 857 be withdrawn from the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
This is your bill, and you've talked to the chairs of the committees. On the Berglund motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Any other motions or resolutions?
Any other motions?
Mr. President.
Senator Pogabiller.
I would move that we take up the calendar. Ninth.
On the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Bill on the calendar. Be sent to file 108.
Senate File 108, a bill for an act relating to highways designating the Walter F. Mondale Drive in Duluth.
Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll. We've got three roll call votes here, kind of a rapid order, so sit up. Whistling. All senators, having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 66 ayes and 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill on the calendar, be Senate File 112.
Senate File 112, a bill for an act relating to commerce, prohibiting body piercing services for a person under the age of 18 without parental consent.
Secretary will take the roll. Senators, having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 40 ayes, 25 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill on the calendar, be Senate File 563.
Senate File 563, a bill for an act relating to energy requiring development of an economic strategy to maximize state economic development benefits from the renewable electric energy industry, regulating the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. It's 64 ayes and 1 nay. The bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Mr. President.
Nick. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move that we take up the consent calendar.
On the motion to take up the consent calendar, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. There's one bill on this consent calendar today, Senate File number 1053. Senator Rummel, We can progress the bill. Without objection, we're going to progress the consent calendar for the day.
Okay, then, Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
And then, Mr. President, I'd like to designate number 3, number 4, number 8, and number 10. 3, 4, 8, 10.
General orders will be Senate file 805, Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate file 805 be recommended to pass.
Senator Tomasoni on the bill.
Mr. President, Senate file 805 is a resolution called the Employee Free Choice Act. And this particular bill is in regards to labor organizing and being able to organize unions at workplaces. Currently, American working people are struggling
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, what do we have before us now?
Number 3 on general orders, Senate file 805.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Senator Frederick. I took the wrong bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, we do listen to the explanations. We don't want you to try and slip something by us.
Mr. President.
Not everybody listens.
Mr. President.
I can tell that. Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Frederickson, thank you so much. We've been trying to make this point with Senator Tomasoni for years. And he thought that he could just offer an amendment here, and that he could proceed with the bill, but now he actually has to explain his bills.
Try it again. Senator Tomasoni.
I'm not even going to comment on that, Senator Pogemiller. Thank you, Mr. President. Senate file 805 is a bill supports hearing aid coverage for children with a hearing loss that occurs after birth. The bill would extend coverage to children birth through 18 with an acquired hearing loss. The law currently covers children with a congenital loss. The language of the current law is problematic because it restricts coverage to children with functional congenital malfunction of the ear. There are problems with that language. The condition is congenital, that is, present at birth, as opposed to acquired in the early postnatal period, is usually impossible to know. Whether or not the hearing impairment is due to a malfunction and whether or not it is congenital are medically unimportant. If untreated, a significant childhood hearing loss causes irreversible harm, whether it is present at birth or occurs in the days or months after birth. Whether it is due to a malfunction of the cells of the inner ear or from a chemical disturbance of the inner ear is impossible to find out and clinically irrelevant. The current law then requires healthcare providers to make a determination that are impossible to know. Research shows that early intervention strategies for children who have been identified will save $30,000 to $200,000 during a child's kindergarten, elementary, and secondary education. For those 90 children identified a year, that is $2.7 million to $18 million in savings over 13 years. Now, costs to insurance companies, which could result in an increase in premium, will be offset by reduced costs in speech therapy. 40 out of 43 parents surveyed said that they receive speech therapy at a cost to the insurance industry of $8,000 to $14,000 every 3 years. One hearing aid would cost the insurance industry $1,600 every 3 years, and two would only cost $3,200. The American Speech and Hearing Association says that costs for speech therapy would be cut by at least 40% if children receive early intervention. This would result in costs being cut or offset to the insurance industry. Passage of this law will provide coverage for all children regardless of their hearing loss. We shouldn't discriminate against children and their families based on the cause of their loss. There will be cost savings to the state and we believe to the insurance industry also. I'd appreciate your support.
Any further discussion on Senate File 805? Seeing none, the question occurs on Senator Tomasoni that Senate File 805 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on Senate General Orders will be Senate File 543, number 4, on the Senate General Orders calendar. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 543 be recommended to pass.
Senator Tomasoni, explanation of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the Employee Free Choice Act. It's a resolution memorializing Congress to support the act. It has already passed the House of Representatives. What this is about is America's working people are struggling to make ends meet, and our middle class is disappearing. So it's important to remember that the best opportunity for working men and women is to get ahead economically by uniting with co-workers and to bargain with their employers for better wages and benefits. More than half of U.S. workers, nearly 60 million, say they would join a union right now if they could. But the current system for forming unions and bargaining is broken. Every day, corporations deny employees the freedom to decide for themselves whether to form a union to bargain for a better life. They routinely intimidate, harass, coerce, and even fire people who try to organize unions. The system has to be changed to give all working people the freedom to make their own choice about whether to have a union and bargain for better wages and benefits. If the law is changed to allow more workers to make their own decision without management coercion, more of America's workers will be able to ensure fair treatment on the job and improve their standards of living. The Employee Free Choice Act would restore workers' freedom to form unions and bargain by strengthening penalties for companies that coerce or intimidate employees, establishing a mediation and binding arbitration when the employer and workers cannot agree on the first contract, and enabling employees to form unions when a majority expressed their decision to join the union by signing authorization cards. The Employee Free Choice Act has bipartisan backing in Congress. Members, I'd appreciate your support.
Discussion on the resolution. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Tomasoni, I just would like to know what is the problem with having...
Senator Hand, let's listen to the debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Tomasoni, just as I understand it right now, there's a requirement for a secret ballot to determine if a union gets implemented in a workplace, and I'd like to know what is wrong with having a secret ballot to determine union representation.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, currently what's happening is that corporations are routinely intimidating and harassing and coercing and even firing people who try to organize unions, and today's labor laws are powerless to stop them. What happens is that the employer has complete control of the balloting process, and they don't count the ballots. And in fact, we had an example of where 11 people voted to organize, and it took the employer three years to count 11 ballots. Let me give you an example of what else is going on. In 2005, 50% of the decisions issued by the National Labor Relations Board in unfair labor practices took more than 1,231 days from the filing of the charge to the board decision. After the majority vote of the union representation, an employer can challenge the result of the election and know that by exercising available appeals, a final decision upholding the result of the election will likely take place more than 2 years from the date of the filing. What this new law would do in the federal government, what it would say that if 51% of the union workers vote to organize, that then the employer has to recognize them. The cards that these union members or the people who vote to sign the union would then have to be verified by the National Labor Relations Board as being accurate. And if the employees and the employer do do not agree to a contract within 3 months, and that's just the first contract, then they would go to arbitration so that they'd actually be able to get a contract in place.
And, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hatt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. I appreciate the explanation. It's still not clear to me why voting is not the preferred method to determine union representation.
Wait a second. Quiet down.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm going to have to get a louder voice, maybe as a former member used to have from this corner. But you've pointed out a few things that have happened in the current way that this is administered. Senator Tomasoni, it may speak to the need to have more consistent enforcement of current law. There's clearly opportunity for, things to happen that shouldn't happen. I don't know that we ought to overturn that law. The thing that I'm concerned about is when you say we're going to have a representation not determined by secret ballot but by people publicly signing a card, what is to prevent the intimidation from the union to members who they wish to want to have bring that union into place? What's to prevent that intimidation? You speak about intimidation from the business. It seems to me that you have just as much opportunity for intimidation from the other side. And Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I asked a question there, but I'm just raising some questions, and I would urge members to not support this resolution. I think that the idea of having a secret ballot to determine membership for organization purposes is a pretty long-standing idea, and I think that we oughtn't to be memorializing Congress to overturn free ballot or secret ballots for elections.
Mr. President, Senator Hand, right now the elections that exist between the employers and the employees are unlike any election that's held anywhere. The employer has all the powers and controls all the information the workers can receive, and they can routinely poison the process by intimidating, harassing, coercing, and even fire people who try to organize unions. This new method, when a majority of the employees vote for a union by signing authorization cards, those authorization cards are validated by the federal government, and the employer will be legally required to recognize and bargain with the workers' union. This is not a new approach. For years, some responsible employers, such as Singular Wireless, have taken a position of allowing employees to choose by majority decision whether to have a union, and those companies have found that majority sign-up is an effective way to allow workers the freedom to make their own decision, and it results in less hostility and polarization in the workplace than the failed NLRB process.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Tomasoni, would you yield for a question?
He will yield. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Tomasoni, as you've done your research on this particular bill, is this, in fact, supporting the legislation going on in Washington at this time?
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, this is a resolution that is supporting the legislation that has passed through the House of Representatives in Washington, yes.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Limmer.
Senator Tomasoni, of course, Senator Hahn has mentioned it, and also it's been rather controversial in Washington on the federal level of whether we should allow the vote to unionize should be public. This legislation in Washington, though, focuses on taking it away from a secret ballot and turning it into a non-secret ballot. There is a lot of concern about that, and I've been reading on it that there's not only concern on the part of employers, but there's concern as far as polls being taken by labor populations that they too are concerned about the secret ballot being removed from legislation. Can you tell me what's wrong with the secret ballot? Is there something in the system that's broken? Why would we want to affect that change after so many years of protecting workers' rights and the secret ballot that they have been given? Why would we now want to make that non-secret?
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, I think I already answered that question, but I'll do it again. Okay, what's happening is that the employer has total control of what goes on in the secret balloting process. And in fact, in many instances, the ballots were never even counted, or they took a really, really long time to count. If we thought Florida was bad, this is even worse. They have There's an instance of 11 people voting to unionize in a company, and it took the company 2 years to count the ballots. After that, they can then appeal the balloting question to the National Labor Relations Board that takes an average of 1,232 days from the filing to the board decision, and after that, they can also be that decision can be challenged again. So oftentimes it doesn't work. If I'm not mistaken, the Freedom of Choice Act does not eliminate the secret balloting, but it offers another choice for how to form unions.
Mr. President,
Senator Lieber.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Tomasoni, I do have to ask your forgiveness for asking some questions. We have a lot of conversation on the floor of the Senate that's making it very difficult to have an adequate debate. Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Tomasoni, I was doing a little work on the history of the secret ballot. And I noticed that, at least according to the National Labor Relations Board, when a secret ballot is being used, unions win 3 out of every 5 elections. Now, maybe that isolated incident that you referred to with 11 employees might have been accurate. Maybe the union didn't get its way. But according to the National Labor Relations Board, and by the way, the secret ballot was passed in 1935. So it's over 71 years old as far as a bona fide, respected use of a voting process. Another thing that I wanted to make reference to, there's been some recent polls also of union labor. According to a January 2007 McLaughlin & Associates poll, 87% of Americans agree that every worker should continue to have the right to a federally supervised secret ballot election when deciding whether to organize a union. And of that 87% of Americans on the whole, 79% explicitly oppose the so-called Employee Free Choice Act. Also, a Zogby International poll conducted in 71 declared that 71% of union members agree that the current secret ballot process is fair. So, Senator Tomasoni, I'm just a Midwest kid out here in Minnesota looking at what the federal government is considering, but I'm wondering, I keep asking the question, what's broken about a secret ballot? We seem to have it in every other level of voting in this country. Why would we consider having an open ballot for union purposes?
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, Senator Lieber, let me try again. First of all, the Employee Free Choice Act doesn't take away the secret ballot option, okay? But what's been happening is that once the secret ballot has been passed and the... Are you listening now, Senator Lieber, so I don't have to explain this twice? Okay. What happens is that it takes so long from the time that the ballot is passed until all of the appeals are gone through the National Labor Relations Board that oftentimes it's several years before a group of workers who have opted to form a union are then allowed to form the union. And oftentimes what happens is in the process is that workers are harassed and coerced by management and are oftentimes fired for trying to form unions. And so while it would still be okay for workers to decide to vote on a secret ballot if they want to, the Employee Free Choice Act allows them to do it differently, and it comes up with some remedies to a broken system.
Mr. President.
Senator Lieber.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Tomasoni, you make reference to, I think the word you used was, often management holds up union organizing to the point of holding it back so that unions do not organize. They have a federal right. Every employee has a federal right to unionize. They have a federal right to go forward in a present this to the employees of that particular corporate setting. At least that's how I understand it. I was a union member, but I don't remember exactly how the union was formed because I wasn't there during that particular phase of the union history. But nevertheless, the question does come up is there has been discussion of intimidation by both sides. Unions have been known to intimidate their own members if a decision is not being made. Now, I would not venture to think that Minnesota unions would ever consider using intimidation to affect their opinions of the workers and the members of their own union. Heaven forbid that that would ever happen. But nevertheless, we do know that in the past history of the labor union movement in the United States, that has been known to happen from time to time. So we do know that there happens to be players on both sides of the equation that can use intimidation to get their way. Now the only question is, what's fair for the American worker? And is it a secret ballot that protects their decision? There are some workers that are not unionized that don't want to be a union member. And I personally believe that they should have a right to protect their ballot so that they can cast a ballot without intimidation by either employer or employee.
Senator Paraso, did you want to answer again?
I would just respond one more time. Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, the Employee Free Choice Act does not take that option away. There, if one-third of the workers want to have an NLBA private or secret election, they can then do so. So it's not doing that. But the difference in the intimidation factor is that the employer controls the voters' paychecks and their livelihood, and they have unlimited access to speak against the unions in the workplaces while restricting pro-union speeches, and they have the freedom to intimidate and coerce workers, and they even fire workers. And in one-fourth of private sector union organizing attempts, somebody was fired. And in 78% of the private employers require supervisors to deliver anti-union messages to workers whose jobs they control and pay. So there is an unlevel playing field here.
Senator Paraso.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Tomasoni, I just have to rise and make a comparison to some of the this is an addition or an amendment to some of the listing that Senator Limmer brought up about all the places where a secret ballot is preserved for obvious reasons. It's the privacy of the person who casts the ballot. Recently, there was a chapter of a nationally known fraternal organization whose auxiliary was not getting great participation and decided they had to determine whether or not they would go forward continuing the auxiliary or whether it would be dissolved and therefore never function again as an organization. And that organization had done everything with secret ballots to date on their votes of importance to them. And so they postponed the meeting two or three times in order to make sure they had good turnout. And when that day came, there were some people who were on their way but could not make it at the time the meeting began. They insisted upon holding that secret ballot untouched until the last person who they knew was on their way could come and cast the ballot. And I have to say, if fraternal organizations prefer and protect that secret ballot for their purposes, why would we expect Congress to change that for anybody who's in the workforce anywhere? And the interesting thing is when that one person came and cast their ballot, it turned out that overwhelmingly they had decided to continue the auxiliary. It didn't change the margin a lot because that was an overwhelming vote. And so why would you ask for something that's working for every organization otherwise? Why would you ask Congress to change it for labor unions?
I like they're lying.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Paraso, did you want an answer, or was that just rhetorical?
I don't know. We could move on. Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, I love an answer, but it was rhetorical because I think it's an example that doesn't align perfectly with your job, but it certainly does with your alignment in life.
Well, and Mr. President, Senator Paraso, the system is broke. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's not working, and And the law that's in front of Congress right now does not preclude having an election if one-third of the members decide to do it. But one and card sign-ups have been around for a long time. But for the people who want to know about whether or not there is pressure from unions, there are obviously pressure from unions to join unions. But what has happened with the majority sign-up card is that employees have experienced way less pressure than they have when there have been elections trying to go through. But in addition, it's illegal for anyone to coerce employees to sign a union authorization card, and any person who breaks the law will be subject to penalties under the Employee Free Choice Act. So those kind of things are taken care of also.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. President, we've spent a lot of time on a resolution to memorialize Congress to kind of get off their duff and do what many of us feel is right. And I can't tell you how strongly I feel that that Congress should stand up and do the right thing. Currently, union membership is way, way, way down from its heyday back in the 50s and 60s. Let's look at what happened with the resurgence of the middle class in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. It boomed, and a lot of that was because of labor unions. It's because of their blood, sweat, and tears. That's what this country was founded upon. The labor union I belong to, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, we voted our charter in 1901. And the reason we did was because one of every two electrical workers was dying on the job. We asked the companies at that time, hey, give us some help. Give us a little bit of training. They said no. We organized. We became strong. And the other thing that we became, well-paid, well-compensated, and we don't kill one and two workers anymore because we have safety programs. People, this fear about the unions is only that. It's fear. Unions are a good thing. It's something that we should all promote. Because the better the unions do, the better the middle class does. Period. Now, folks, this is a resolution. We've probably talked about it for what, Senator Tomasoni? 30, 45, 50 minutes? It's an important resolution to many of us, but it's a resolution. Let's just vote and get it over with.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Tomasoni, this is purely rhetorical, but please feel free to respond. There's absolutely no doubt that our wages and benefits today are a result of unions. That's why we do have health care benefits. That's why we do have better wages in a lot of situations. There is no doubt that when unions came into being, it was a necessity. There is no doubt that they still do some very good work today. And there is no doubt that they should have the freedom to organize in a good and lawful way. Senator Tomasoni, incidents like the one that you talked about, where it took 2 years to count 11 votes, are ridiculous. It shouldn't happen, and there should be ways to fix that. The thing that I would caution, and by the way, Senator Tomasoni, you're also right in that it does not take away the freedom to do a secret ballot, but it does raise the bar in order to get a secret ballot. And that's where my concern comes, is strictly with the secret ballot part, not the importance of the unions or anything of that nature. But whenever we raise the bar for a secret ballot, we're taking something away that's an intricate freedom in this country. And so I don't think we should ever make it more difficult to have a secret ballot. That's why this doesn't work.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And before I ask Senator Tomasoni my question, with respect to Senator Murphy, I think the description of the history of unionism that he gave us was maybe a little bit incomplete. It's certainly clear that unions were much stronger in the 50s, 60s than they are today. The reason for that may be lots of things. Maybe the labor market has changed. Maybe that there are companies now that are much more interested in getting good employees. There may be the argument to have unions is much weaker today than it was in the 40s and 50s. In fact, I think that It may be time to ask my friends on the other side, Senator Tomasoni, Senator Murphy, if they would join me in changing Minnesota law to make us, we're right now one of the few states in the country left that still has compulsory union membership in this state. And if the argument is that unions are a great thing, then why do we pass laws forcing people to become members of unions? And maybe they would join me to overturn that law, and we can join the majority of states across the country that doesn't have those compulsory laws and have what are called right-to-work laws. So I think that we can talk about unionism and talk about the history of the labor movement, but going back to your resolution, Senator Tomasoni, the thing that you talked about that I want to respond to is that you're claiming there's some intimidation on the part of employers, that they may do things to discourage people from forming a union. And it may very well be that companies have a self-interest to discourage a union from forming in their place of employment. It's also true that the union has a self-interest in forming a union in that place of employment. So this is really a question of what is the procedure that is best going to serve to make that, to allow that to happen in a fair and open way. And it may be that there are some bad actors among the business community that might be doing some things that could be perceived as intimidating or could be discouraging. But the bottom line is, when they get into that polling booth, nobody knows how people vote. Nobody knows how people vote. And people can vote their conscience, and they can be intimidated, and they can be threatened, and they can be, but when they get in the voting booth to vote for a union or not, that no one knows how they voted. And so the idea that there can be direct retaliation against someone for voting for a union in a workplace, I don't know how that can happen unless those ballots are being examined one by one by as people vote, and I don't think that's legal. But on the other hand, the resolution that you're advocating that supports a change in the law that essentially makes the vote occur by petition, that you have union organizers going around that are asking people to sign and say, show that you want to join the union or form a union, and that becomes the de facto vote. And so not only do they know how many people are signing up, but they know exactly who is signing up. And so there's a great opportunity for intimidation in that case because they know exactly the people that are signing up to form the union. So I think this is not, at the federal level, good law. I think it's stalled in the Senate. I hope it stays stalled in the Senate. We should not, as a state body, be advocating, memorializing Congress to do something that is not a good thing, that is a change in precedent, is a change in the sacred idea of a secret ballot. So let's defeat this resolution, members.
A further discussion on Senate File 543. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Senator Tomasoni. Senator Tomasoni, I understand that Minnesota is not one of the right-to-work states, but I'm wondering what the Free Choice Act of 2007, how it might impact states that are right-to-work states. Can you just clarify that?
Senator Tomasoni.
Well,
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, Senator Ortman, I don't know that that has anything to do with the Employee Free Choice Act and the right-to-work state. All I know is that if they decide to go with the card sign up to become a union, that then they will be a union. Now, whether or not the people at those businesses have to join that union or not, I'm not sure. But I know that what's going on here is that if we are trying to get the right to organize to actually work. It's in law that everybody has the right to organize, and the reason that people are getting fired, not because of the way they vote, it's because of they are active in trying to organize that union within their company, so it's obvious who they are. The fact of the matter is that while it is in the union's best interest to try and get people to join the union, the statistics do support the fact that there is way less coercion when people are allowed to sign a card as opposed to when there is a secret ballot.
Any further discussion on Senator Vandeveer?
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, after listening to all this discussion, I do have an amendment. I have the A50 amendment, which I think might help with some of the dilemma people are having with this. So I'd like to offer the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the Vandeveer A50 amendment.
Senator Vandeveer moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 543 as follows. Page 2, after line 20, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Vandeveer on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like a roll call on this amendment, Mr. President.
Three hands for roll call. There will be a roll call. Is it on the system? Maybe you could, I don't think it's up yet, but maybe you could explain it when we're trying to get it up on the computer. You could go ahead and explain it then.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. What the amendment does is it's very simple. It just says that be it further resolved that Congress never enact legislation that does not protect the privacy of the employee's vote. And I think, members, if this was included in the resolution, that I think, you know, it would solve a lot of the concerns that members have.
Hey, if it's, we're going to read it again from the front desk, and please pay attention because it's not coming up on the computer. So I think it's short enough that we can.
Senator Vandeveer moves to amend Senate Resolution 543 as follows. On page 2, after line 20, insert, quote, be it further resolved that Congress never enact legislation that does not protect the privacy of the employee's vote, end quote.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President,
on the amendment.
I don't think that's necessary as a part of this resolution.
Further discussion, Senator Vandeveer.
Well, Mr. President, Senator Tomasoni, it's just a minor change, and it just states that we would like Congress to protect the privacy of the ballot, and I think that's kind of sacrosanct here in Minnesota. I'm not certain why you would oppose this. It just provides some clarification. In my view, isn't that the case?
Further discussion. Secretary will take the Senator Limmer on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to thank Senator Vandeveer for bringing this amendment that's so critical to the protection of workers' rights. I did make mention just a little while ago during the time when we had a lot of excess discussion in the chamber that according to recent polls, not only in 2004 but in 2007, 87% of Americans agree that every worker should continue to have the right to a federally supervised secret ballot election. And in 1974, a Zogby International survey was conducted that 71% of union members agreed that the current secret ballot process is fair, and that the survey also found that 78% of union members said that Congress should keep the existing secret ballot election process in place as it is.
Further discussion on the amendment. Secretary will take the roll on the Vandeveer A50 amendment. All senators having voted, desire the vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 22 ayes and 43 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill. There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Tomasoni that Senate File 543 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Okay, we have two more bills.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I think because things are running a little long, I think we will not do number 8 today. We will just do number 10. I've talked with Senator Pappas. She's comfortable with that. So if we could just move to number 10.
The last bill on general orders be Senate File 1499, Senator Boniff.
Mr. Chair, members, what this bill does, I move that when this committee do arise, the Senate File 1499 be recommended to pass.
Okay. Discussion on the bill. Yeah, explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, here we go again.
This bill is intended for students who have been in an intervention program of some kind. They basically, they have a chemical health issue, whether it be drugs or alcohol, or in some cases a mental health issue. And upon completing treatment, they've been referred to a recovery-based high school. This bill allows those students who are now attending the recovery-based high school, more commonly you might know of them as a sobriety high or a sober high, that is the most common type of recovery-based high schools, allowing those students to participate in athletics in their home districts. Previously, the rule was those high schools could enter into a co-op agreement with their resident districts, and many times this never got resolved. And so it resulted in students not being able to participate. And there was a big story this past winter about, you know, a top-notch athlete who wasn't able to swim with her high school. So that's the reason for the legislation, is to make sure that these students, and we know it's so important for them to get back on track, have these kinds of opportunities to make sure they do have them. And this was passed in committee unanimously with no opposition, and the Minnesota State High School League does support this motion.
Further discussion on Senate File 1499, Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, I have the A50 amendment.
Terry will report the Neville A50 amendment.
Senator Neville moves to amend Senate File 1499 as follows, page 1, line 13. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Neville on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a real simple amendment, but it does have some, perhaps some controversy. This would add to the bill that any person who attends a charter school should likewise be eligible for participating in sports in the district in which they live. And it directs the high school league to pass rules making that possible. I don't know how many charter schools all of you have in your district. I might have as many as anybody. I think I have 5 or 6. And most of them are small enough. The budget that they have is just enough for the academic side of it. And many of them would like to continue participating in these extracurricular sports. Sometimes it's not even sports. Sometimes it's a debate club or math club or something like that. And right now the districts, some allow it, some don't. But if we want to make sure that our kids have the full spectrum of benefit in the K-12 system, even kids who choose to attend a charter school should be able to participate in those activities. And obviously, the high school league will develop appropriate rules for chargebacks for that, but they should be allowed to participate. So this is expanding your bill a little beyond just people who are coming out of drug treatment programs, but it's a pretty fundamental right, I think, that children should be allowed to participate in these activities, and that it shouldn't matter if they attend the charter school or not.
Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Neville, I am familiar with that issue with regard to charter schools, and in fact, the Minnesota State High School League was very clear in letting me know they would not support the legislation that I am carrying here today if that legislation was part of it, that they feel very strongly that's not something they support. And so what I would ask Senator Neville, and I would urge members to consider, is to withhold that amendment at this time for the following reason. These kids, and there are several of them who right now have as soon as they knew about this legislation, have spoken up and have asked us to carry this, who want to play this season. They actually want to be able to try out next week in their school, and that's why we're hearing this bill today. If we do not pass this bill in this way, it will be very controversial. The Minnesota State High School League will get involved. The school districts will get involved. And I suspect that ultimately the students who we know are at risk and who desperately need a chance to stay healthy and stay on the right track won't have that opportunity. So, Senator Neville, I think what you talk about deserves a committee hearing and deserves to have everybody get a say in where they stand on that issue, because I don't think it's a black and white issue. And so I would ask that you carry separate legislation with regard to charter schools so that that conversation can be had. And so I don't consider it a friendly amendment for this particular bill, that is not the intent of this bill.
Senator Scoyt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would rise to oppose the Senator Neville amendment. Members, there is a process in place for school boards, whether they're charter school boards or public school boards, to negotiate whether they participate in extracurricular activities or not. A number of our schools have done that, and the process is in place. The reason it's important to keep this local control there is there's a number of economic issues that have to be dealt with when you're talking about extracurricular transportation, who's responsible for that, and other economic concerns. So I would ask that we leave the local control in place and let school boards negotiate these. The process is there to do that, and I would urge us to vote down the Neville Amendment.
We're on the amendment. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. As I've begun to understand this issue, I see that Senator Bonhoff's bill is focused on allowing kids that successfully pass a recovery-focused program to be eligible for team involvement throughout a neighboring or a school district of their choice, I believe it is. Now, Senator Neville has the bill that would expand the opportunity to bring kids from a charter school to also have a right to participate in athletic events. Now, this reminds me of a long ago debate I had in the Minnesota House years ago when we had programs for kids that were, let's say, disciplinary problems in school. They got, if they were enrolled in these programs, they got summer programs to go to, they had camps to go to, they had a whole host of things that they could participate in. But what was really compelling was when a 14-year-old African-American girl came to the committee and said, you know, I'm a straight-A student. I'm a good girl. I work hard. I don't get in trouble. Where's my summer camp program? There was no summer camp program for that 14-year-old. Here we have charter school kids that have never had a disciplinary problem. They're involved in just a different way to teach, and yet we continue, and the State High School Athletic Association, they're barring that involvement of kids from a charter school, and we're going to allow that? We have the opportunity. We have the opportunity to make one little baby step forward in teaching and treating our kids all the same. I think that's the better way to go, and I think Senator Neville has a good amendment to that effect. Mr. President, if a roll call has not been asked, I would ask for a roll call.
Three hands for a roll call. Will be a roll call. Senator Neville.
Well, Mr. President, this is an important issue, I think, but I'm not trying to just score points on a vote. I would like to have it passed, and Senator Wieger has just approached me and said that he will give me a hearing on this issue in the Education Committee. And so that is good enough for me. I will introduce a bill, and I'll expect a hearing on it sometime next week. So for now, I'll withdraw the motion, and I hope that we can vote on it later this session.
Okay, the amendment A50 has been withdrawn. Any further discussion on Senate File 1499, Senator Ortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question for Senator Bonhoff. I have multiple students in my district that participate in Sobriety High, and I've met with them on several occasions. And they tell me that the purpose of Sobriety High is to take the kids out of the mainstream and take them out of their peer groups because the peer pressure is a constant threat to their recovery. And I'm wondering, how do you quantify that for the students that want to enroll in these sports, making sure that that is not a threat to the recovery of the students that we've already segregated for that particular purpose?
Senator Bonnef.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Ortman, you are correct that that is why these students are referred to Sobriety High, that in fact whatever program they were in recommended, or in some cases the courts have seen that in order for them to stay healthy, they would be much better off in a separate program so that they don't, that they aren't, you know, tempted to be doing that. However, those very same programs testified at my hearing and said they felt that this was a critical component of their recovery, that being able to participate in athletic activities, that what that does for self-esteem and what that will do for their long-term reentry into regular society, which is ultimately what they want, that this was probably the healthiest first step that they could take. And certainly if a parent felt like it wasn't the right thing, then, you know, they wouldn't do that. But I think that in many cases that this in fact is the best thing for them. And another thing, just to make sure people understand, is that these kids would still be subject to the same rules that every other, what Senator Limmer called good kid, is subject to. Anytime they have an offense, you know, they have to sit out their time just like every other student. We're certainly not trying to treat them better in any way, but I think that the treatment programs believes this is the healthiest way for them to participate.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1499, Senator Senjum?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the author yield?
She will yield, Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, I'm trying to understand something here, and it may be that perhaps time has passed me by and that certain things have changed in life, but I tell you what, you know, back when I was young and thin and could play basketball and all those good things, you know, if you got caught you know, drinking, smoking, and so on, you were just off the team, and you were off the team, and that's the way it was, and there wasn't anything, you know, there wasn't any appeal process. It was just, that was the consequence. And I'm looking at this, and I'm kind of wondering where the consequence is. Now we're saying maybe you get caught drinking, and maybe you do have an alcoholic problem. Maybe you do have a substance abuse problem. But you go to treatment, now you can come back and play ball. What about those kids that, say, did get caught, didn't necessarily have the problem, simply, you know, made a bad mistake one night, maybe hanging out with the wrong people? They got caught, they're off the team, and they can never come back. Senator Bonhoeff, do we have that kind of situation yet, where if you're caught but not necessarily addicted to the substance, be it alcohol or drugs or whatever, that you are off the team, period, no questions, can't come back?
Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, right now the Minnesota State High School League rules specify exactly what the consequences are, and the school districts can have rules that are stricter than those rules. But the Minnesota State High School League's rules say that the first offense, you sit out for one game, or I believe it's three, maybe five contests, a certain number of contests, or whichever is greater. And for a second offense, you sit out for, I believe it's 2 weeks or a certain number of contests. For a third offense, you literally lost the opportunity to play. Now, most school districts in our state, they follow the Minnesota State High School League rules, and that's the progress. However, there are some districts that are even stricter than that, and you might just lose your opportunity to play entirely. This bill says, notwithstanding other law or league rule, and then ends with, if you go down to the end, it says that it does not prevent a district from having rules tougher than the Minnesota State High School League rule. So if that is a district's rule, that the first offense you're off, you'd still be off. That kid from Sobriety High would not get to play. We are not asking for any better treatment of these kids than our regular kids. If they've made the mistake, they need to pay the consequence. Sometimes these kids haven't gotten in trouble, so they're not subject to a Minnesota State High School League rule, or they may have only had one offense, but in fact they have a terrible drug problem. And so they go to treatment, they go to the sobriety high, and they're still eligible at some point for competition. This just lets them play as if they were still in their regular school.
Further discussion on Senate File 1499. The question occurs on the motion of Senator Bonnef that Senate File 1499 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. President. Ms. Chairman.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator. Senate will be in order.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Remaining under...
Mr. President, I think we need to adopt...
Yeah, revert to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. This is the addendum. We don't need... Okay, I guess we need a motion to...
Mr. President,
under the committee, the report of committee, Senator Pogemiller.
I move that the committee reports as printed in the addendum be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
That's it.
Second reading. There's more to the addendum than I saw. So we're on second reading of Senate bills. Without objection, there's one on today's agenda, 971. Without objection, second reading. We have a number of motions. They're authors' motions. Without objection, we will take the motions as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The last order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are a couple of re-referrals on page 5, 1730. Will go to the Tax Committee. Page 6. Senate File 741 will be sent to the Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee. Page 7, 1753 will be sent to the Finance Committee. There's one to be read at the desk.
Senators Pogemiller and Torres-Ray introduce Senate File 1788, a bill for an act relating to economic development requiring registration of certain relative homesteads, appropriating money for a University of Minnesota Area Neighborhood Alliance.
Be referred to the Finance Committee. First reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is announcements of Senate interest. Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, members of the State Government Budget Division, the State Government Budget Division will meet in 1/2 hour at 1:50 at 12:50. Please be there because we do have to finalize some bills today and start completing our budget process. So in 1/2 hour, the State Government Budget Division will meet.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Senate Republicans will meet this evening at 5:45 in our media room, and there will be food. I understand there are possibly committee conflicts, but do the best you can.
Just for Republicans?
What
kind of food do you
We're on a membership drive, Mr. President, so... So all are welcome.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. President, members, I had put at your desks, just for your information, the memorial for Senator Sams that was put into the congressional record by new Congressman Keith Ellison. I thought you'd like to see it.
Senator Saltzman.
The Business, Industry, and Jobs, Mr. President, will meet in 1/2 hour.
Further announcements, Senator Marty.
Mr. President, the Health, Housing, and Family Security meeting has a long agenda this afternoon and this evening, so eat your lunch fast. We're meeting in 20 minutes.
Oh. And we have Senator Dave. Without objection, Senator Latz will be excused from today's session all day. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate adjourn to Wednesday, March 14th, 11 a.m.
Motion to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.